I just want to say I appreciate anyone who came during a fast day. You know, this is not not so simple, but you know, it makes sense that we dedicate our time on a fast day to studying Torah, and that's what we have the opportunity to do. And this is the second part in the series of heroic responsa, which means landmark tshuvas that were written and had an impact on Jewish history. And we began with family last week. We spoke about adoption, issues of yichud. We spoke about a tshuva of the Radbaz. That was last week. Now, this is the second part. I think we're going to get together, if I'm not mistaken, next Sunday as well. I don't remember what comes after that. We'll figure it out. And you'll let me know, or I'll let you know. So we're going to continue today with the study of family. Now, I have to introduce a concept in halacha, which is very fundamental, and that's called yuchsin. Yuchsin means that not every man is allowed to marry every woman, and a lot of it depends upon yuchsin, upon their lineage. Meaning, how did this Jewish person come into the world? So in order to appreciate that concept of yuchsin, we have to introduce another few concepts, one of which is kiddushin and the other is nisuin. And this is Jewish marriage. The next concept we have to introduce is gittin, which is Jewish divorce. Now, if a man and a woman, both Jewish, are married with chuppah and kiddushin, then for her to marry another man requires a get. If she marries another man without a get, then the child of that marriage is called a mamzer or a mamzeres in the case of a female, and that's a psul yuchsin. That means they're disqualified for marriage. They can get married amongst themselves or possibly with gerim. You know, that's a different issue. But for your run-of-the-mill Jew, you can't marry a mamzer if you're a female, and if you're a male, you can't marry a mamzeres. So the issue that we're going to discuss today is what happens in a case where a man and a woman, both Jewish, are living together as husband and wife without chuppah v'kiddushin, and then she decides that they want to terminate the marriage, or maybe they terminate the marriage in a way that's not acceptable according to the laws of halacha v'gittin, and she goes ahead and she wants to get married to another man. She never got a get from her first husband, but then maybe she was never married to her first husband because there was never chuppah v'kiddushin. So to phrase the question, the issue, which is a major issue in Jewish history, and we'll see it dates back many, many centuries, but it's certainly relevant in contemporary life almost on a daily basis. Is there such a thing as halachic marriage without chuppah v'kiddushin? So for those of you who like to write notes, and this would be the heading for today's class, is there such a thing as a halachically binding, valid marriage, which would mean that she cannot marry another man unless she gets a get, even in the absence of chuppah v'kiddushin? There was no official marriage ceremony. There was no rav to be misad kiddushin. Maybe they get married civilly. We could talk about reform marriages. Many, many different examples of marriages which are non-halachic marriages. And does the halacha recognize that? I mean, intuitively, you know, just shooting from the hip, I would say, well, if there's no chuppah v'kiddushin, then it's not marriage. We don't have to worry about it. We don't have to recognize it. And one of the requirements of chuppah v'kiddushin is brachos. You know, we recite brachos. But we have a principle called ein brachos ma'akos, which means that a bracha is a very wonderful embellishment, but it's not indispensable. It's not critical. So the fact that they got married outside of a shul without a rav hamasad kedushin and they didn't make brachos, that's not our issue. That clearly, the absence of bracha would clearly not in any way invalidate the marriage. You could have a chuppah of a kedusha without marriage, and the halacha would recognize it. But there are other issues. For example, the Torah requires, in order to set up Jewish marriage. And just tell me if this microphone bothers anybody, because I don't necessarily need it, but if it helps, it helps. In Jewish marriage, you need kesef, or shtar. So for example, if a man marries a woman, he has to give her what's called a shavah pruta. He has to give her something that's worth at least a pruta. In a case of civil marriage, maybe they swap things, possibly. Maybe they don't swap anything, and there's no kesef at all. Shtar for sure there isn't, because shtar is a document that has to be written lishma with many different requirements, has to be signed by two witnesses, and has to be given in front of two witnesses. And that certainly is not applying. The problem here is that there's a third way of clinching Jewish marriage, and that's called bia, which means an intimate relationship. So if he has an intimate relationship with her, and it's for the sake of creating marriage, it's not out of wedlock, and there are witnesses who can testify to this fact, that itself, again, even in the absence of a Rav HaMasada, there were no brachas, it wasn't performed in a shul or anything of that sort, it wasn't under an official chuppah, but they're living together as husband and wife. And this is the crux of the issue. If a man, a Jewish man and a Jewish woman, for whatever reason, and we're going to give many different reasons as we go along, are living together as husband and wife without chuppah of a kiddushin, does the Torah recognize that as kiddushei bia, the third possible alternative of kiddushin? Again, right away you can ask the question, where are the witnesses? And that's going to be a primary issue. Now the landmark tshuvas on this question really date back over five centuries, more like six centuries ago, to Spain. And we're talking about the Rivash. The Rivash was approximately a century before the Radbaz that we discussed at great length last week. And he was faced with situations of Maranos, of Jews that were forced to accept Christianity. And then later, after surviving, they finally fled and they find themselves in Jewish communities. And the question is, if she had a marriage, in quotation marks, with a man as Christians, because they were living after baptism a life of Christians, and in this particular case that the Rivash is addressing, they were married in a church as Christians. There was no chuppah of a kiddushin in any far stretch of the imagination. You know, chuppah of a kiddushin requires that a man recite the famous Hare At Mekudeshesli Kedas Moshe V'Yisrael. It has to be Kedas Moshe V'Yisrael. It's got to be reflective of the religion of Moshe and Klal Yisrael. That was for sure was left out. You know, the wedding was overseen by the Catholic priest. And now, lo and behold, she shows up in a Jewish community subsequent to this so-called marriage, and she wants to get married to a Jewish man. Her original marriage partner is gone. There's nowhere to find. You can't get a get from him. So there's no possibility of her receiving a get. Now, she finds herself in a Jewish community, sort of, reconnecting to her Jewish heritage, and she wants to get married, Kedas Moshe V'Yisrael, but she cannot have a get, because her first husband, as we call him, is gone. So on this you have a tshuva of the Rivash. Now, if you have the pages, I'm not expecting you to look inside the tshuva itself, but for those who like to follow in a text, you will find this called Shut HaRivash. The page number on the bottom, it's a Hebrew page, will be page number 4. And the Rivash is going to first present the question, and the Rivash's name was Yitzchak ben Sheshet, and one of the great poskim in the 16th century, even going back to the 15th century, and he's talking about a case that took place in Miarka. Okay, so we're dealing with a case of Anus Echad. Anus means a Marano, and this Marana was married to this woman who's now here in front of us, and the Rivash is asked to rule on her personal status vis-a-vis marriage. The Eretz Argon, and that's where the Inquisition took place at that time, and Tavali Naselo, she really demanded to marry him, but Kedas Moshe V'Yisrael, but he never agreed to marry her, and then they had the decree of the Inquisition and baptism. Li'achra Gzera, after the baptism, they were living together as husband and wife. And they were married in a church. And after a certain period of time, he left her. Lo kidsha be'edim, there were no witnesses to testify to the marriage. V'lo niseit lo be'asara, you know, normally we get together 10 people to publicize a marriage. Ela al yidei ovdei kochavim b'chukas daseyem u'b'koenei b'mosam. She was married in this church by the idol worshippers, and it was all in accordance with their laws, the laws of idolatry, and their priests. And this man who's married to this Jewish woman, she's Jewish, he's Jewish, they lived together for a certain period of time, and everybody assumed they were married because they were married in a church. And amongst the Anusim, there were many who still, in their hearts, were Jewish. They knew that this couple was living together as husband and wife. And after 3 months' time, she gets pregnant, and holacha isha hu me'ever liyam, he disappears. He somehow gets a ship out to the far west, the far east. V'yosaf shuv eleal boy, he doesn't show up anymore. And the question is asked to the Rivash to Paskin, what is the status of this woman? Does she have to be concerned with the fact that she was married halakhically to her previous husband or not? And after all, they were married in a church. That seems like the furthest thing away from Chuba Vikidush and Kedas Moshe Yisrael. But there's a problem here, because there are many witnesses, Jewish witnesses. These are the Anusim. Although there was no consummation in front of these witnesses, but it was Yadua, it was public knowledge that they were living together as husband and wife. So we now have a possibility that if they were living together as husband and wife, that itself can serve as a replacement for Kiddushin. Again, which Kiddushin are we talking about? Not Kesef, not Shtar, but rather Kiddushin Bia. And if that be the case, then if everybody knows about it, then we have Eidim, we have witnesses, and Jewish witnesses. And this is the principle called Hein Hein Eidei Yichud, Hein Hein Eidei Bir, meaning that the witnesses don't have to see the actual consummation of the act of intimacy. All they have to know is that this couple is living together. So they saw them secluded in a private area for the sake of marriage. They can figure out and draw the conclusion that there is bia, and that's called Eidus. So again, we have two elements here that have to be taken under really serious consideration that might generate a valid marriage according to halacha. Number one, a Jewish man and a Jewish woman are living as husband and wife for the purpose of a marriage relationship. Again, albeit they were married in a church as Christians, but they are living together, they're Jewish, as husband and wife. Number two, there are witnesses. And those witnesses, based on the principle of Hein Hein Eidei Yichud, Hein Hein Eidei Bia, can testify to the fact that this couple is living together as husband and wife. These witnesses are Jewish. And in that case, what would the halacha say about, let me put it to you this way, a non-formal marriage relationship? What I mean by non-formal, it doesn't comply with the formal restrictions or requirements of halacha in the sense of chuppah v'kiddushin. Certainly a ceremony that was performed by a Catholic priest is not chuppah v'kiddushin. It's the furthest thing from it. But on the other hand, maybe the fact that a Jewish man and a Jewish woman are living together publicly, that means not, it's public knowledge that they're living together as husband and wife, and their intention is certainly to live as husband and wife. That's why they got married in a church. Well, if they have an intention to live as husband and wife, then the bia, which again, as I say, although there were no people watching it, hopefully, right, but there is public knowledge, that itself could really explosively create what we call a method of kiddushin in front of Eidim, which is kiddushay bia. But at this point in the presentation, which you'll see about 10 lines into the tshuva, the Rivash asks the following question. Are you saying that she needs a get? Are you saying that unless she gets a get, she can't get married? That's the implication of the question of the one who asked for a response. And apparently the questioner was assuming that this could be considered Kedas Moshe v'Yisrael, this could be considered Chuppah v'Kiddushin, and therefore she needs a get. He says the following, Their relationship, of course, they're very well aware of the fact that they were not married by a rabbi with chuppah v'kiddushin. They clearly understand that their marriage is what's called a be'ilas znus. Again, if I had a board, I would write it on the board, because this is a very important concept. You'll see it about 12 lines down into the tshuva. Be'ilas znus means a free relationship, which is not within the framework of marriage, because the marriage that they created was a marriage in the church. It was a Christian marriage. So as far as Jewish marriage is concerned, we may assume that this is called a be'ilas nus. It's not a be'ilas ishus meaning for marriage, but rather it's a one-time free love relationship. So here he quotes a principle which is codified in the Shulchan Aruch. It's a sugya in many places in Shas, of Ein Adam Osev Be'ilaso Be'ilas Nus. What that means is that a Jewish man and a Jewish woman who are engaged in this kind of an intimacy, if all things are equal, their intention is for marriage. In other words, we don't need some sort of a formal declaration on their behalf. We have what's called a chazaka. Again, I could spend hours talking to you about what a chazaka is, but for our purposes, a chazaka means a premise. A premise in terms of human psychology, human behavior. People behave in a certain way. Last week we spoke at great length about a woman in a working place, if you remember, the way people normally behave. Here also, we're talking about the way people normally behave. And a man and a woman, Jewish both, and they have the choice of making their be'ilah into a be'ilas nus, or making their be'ilah into be'ilas ishus, then at no loss, that could be considered a be'ilas ishus. Meaning, why would a person want to be in violation of the Torah when he could just as easily have that same action implemented, but within the framework of the Torah? And that's the Gemara's principle called Ein Adam. It's a chazak in a person. A person has this choice of either being a bi'ilah outside the framework of marriage, or, and that's called a bi'ilah snus, or a bi'ah of kiddushin. He would certainly rather have a bi'ah l'shem kiddushin. And if we combine that principle with the principle of Hein Eidei Yichud, which means that they're living together as husband and wife, presumably they want their bi'ilah to be a bi'ilah l'shem kiddushin, not a bi'ilah snus. Not only that, there are witnesses here, because everyone knows about the fact that they're living together. That's public knowledge. Then for sure she should need a get. And this is how the Rivash analyzes the logic of the Shoel. Why the person who asked the question was so convinced that according to the laws of the Torah, she would need a get. And if she didn't have a get, then the child from that marriage, if she were to marry another man, would be a mamzer. And we'll soon see how this tshuva, this response to the Rivash, has tremendous repercussions throughout Jewish history. It's going to be relevant to the Ethiopians, it's going to be relevant to what's called the Karoim, and to many other Jews who get married, but not with chuppah v'kiddushin, not with the rabbi, not the way the halacha formally requires chuppah v'kiddushin, but yet they live together as husband and wife, and everybody knows that. It's public knowledge. So this tshuva, which dates back about 6 centuries, is going to be the landmark tshuva that's going to have a tremendous impact for all generations. Now, the tshuva goes on and on. I only photocopied, I think, one page of the tshuva. You don't have page 5, do you? No. Okay, so we'll try to see if we can summarize this very long tshuva. Yeah, please.
Can I just ask, you said that they were married by the church, whatever. So wouldn't that be proof that it's not znus, it is an intention, even though it's not chuppah v'kiddushin, but...
Right, that's certainly...
If they would have just started living together as well.
Right, that's certainly Right, the premise of the Shoel was that the fact that they got married means that they want to live together as husband and wife. But as we'll soon see, there's a great gap between living together as husband and wife and living together l'shem ishus, meaning halachic Jewish ishus. And that's what the Rivash is challenged by. We're now at the following crossroads. We understand all the arguments in favor of requiring a get. What do I mean? The intention of this man and woman is to live as husband and wife. They are Jewish, and we have to apply the principle of be'ilas Ishus, meaning this is not a bilas nus, because a person doesn't want his be'ila to be a bilas nus. That would be thumbs down. That would be a violation. Why not consider it bias ishus? And not only that, as we said before, there are witnesses. Now, in this tshuva, the rivash, there are five different adya, please.
Isn't there a concept that if the witnesses, let's say there are 10 people who know that they're living together, but they're not kosher witnesses, would that invalidate the vow?
Okay.
She doesn't need to get.
That's going to be one of the five arguments of the Rivash. So
that's the answer.
Well, one of the five answers. You see, that answer alone, I just want to point that again. I'm trying not to jump ahead of myself, but in this case, it's almost impossible not to. But what we're going to see down the line is that if the Rivash is telling us that there are no witnesses that are kosher, that's going to be a real problem. I'll tell you why. Because in the case of Karoim, for example, you can blame the first generation Karoim who ideologically and deliberately rejected the belief in what we call Tor Shval Peh. But when you get to the next generation of Karoim, and they're already living together as Karoim, again, they're Jews by birth, but it's very hard to blame them for their behavior pattern, there we might argue that there are Edim. And again, if Karoim get married, a Jew and a Jewess, and then later on, they or she wants to get married to a Jewish man, let's say she comes back into the fold, it's going to be hard to say that all the Edim who witness this are psulim, because even if she's living in a community of Karoim, those Karoim are second generation Karoim. They're not what you call Rishoyim, they're not evildoers. So again, we'll get to that in just a minute. So what I decided to do for you, there's a rabbi from New York City by the name of Rabbi Friedman who writes a beautiful summary of the Rivash in English. So I wanted to take advantage of that just so that we can fit in a lot of different discussions in the short amount of time that we have. So this you'll see on a page on the top left, it should say 124, and on the right side, 125. You find such a page?
Yes.
So towards the bottom of page 124, he begins to present the Rivash's answer to this problem. And the response of the Rivash, as I told you before, is really a major breakthrough, because, you know, without his five different arguments, we're really stuck. There is so much of a push here in favor of recognizing this marriage that took place with two Jews that were baptized in a church by a priest. And at this point, it looks like... Now, why am I being dramatic about this? It's only because my purpose in this entire series is to show you how the history of Psak is really highlighted by heroism. I'm not talking about the heroism of the Holocaust, you know, if we could get together on Tisha B'Av, that's what I've talked to you about. But I'm talking about a different type of heroism, a halachic heroism, in which a posek is willing to put their reputation on the line, realizing full well that they are taking a revolutionary position. And it's this breakthrough of the Rivash that's going to pave the way for such important halakhic decisions as the status of Ethiopian Jews who came to Israel, the status of second generation Karoim, and many, many other contemporary issues, especially what I would consider the primary issue in our contemporary life, and that is civil marriages. So let's go through a summary of the five arguments of the Rivash. Argument number one is the following. Anyone who was present at the wedding was a Christian, not necessarily by birth, but in order to avoid the horrible death of those who refused to be baptized, they accepted Christianity. And if they accepted Christianity, even if they were forced to do so, they're living as Christians, they can no longer be kosher liedus. They can no longer be valid for witnesses. Now, I want you to add a footnote here, either in pen or in your mind, to raise the following question. They were forced to accept Christianity. They didn't do it on their own. They was not willing. There were circumstances beyond their control. What's the status of someone who violates the Torah, but clearly because of certain circumstances beyond control? That's called ones. Aleph, Vav, Nun, Samach. At this stage in our presentation, we're going to assume, based on the Rivash, that even a violator of the Torah who has accepted another way of life, another religion, because of onus, because of pain of death, that's not halachically justified. And again, this goes into the whole issue of Kiddush Hashem. And therefore, they have the status of Eidim Psulim, of non-valid witnesses. Because at the end of the day, no matter how much you'll justify this, you know, the Rambam is very famous for writing his Igeret Teiman, you know, to the Yemenite Jews who became Maranos, to tell them and encourage them that they could still be part of the Jewish fold. But nevertheless, we have a good feeling for these Jews, and we want to bring them back. But practically speaking, they are not observing the Torah in any sense whatsoever. Argument number one is there are no Eidim, there are no valid Eidim. Presumably, the Rivash is going to have to expand that beyond the four walls of the church, meaning that there are other Jews that are living in the community as baptized Christians who are aware of the fact that this couple, like any other couple that was, you know, Jewish couple that was married in church, are Jews living together as husband and wife. And the assumption of the Rivash is that once again, we're going to say with regard to all those people in the audience or outside the audience, living in the community, they are disqualified as witnesses. That's argument number one. Argument number two. There's a radical view of the Rashbah. The Rashbah was a Rishon who also came from Spain, but a few good centuries before the Rivash. His name is Rav Shlomo ben Aderes. And he says the following, that it is assumed that a husband knows that kiddushin cannot be effectuated, and thus his intention to consummate his betrothal cannot be assumed. Meaning that if you talk about a person who has no clue as to how to effectuate erusin, meaning marriage, then you could say that his living together with his wife was, in his mind at least, a substitute for chuppah kiddushin. Says the Rivash, that's not the case here. The Jews who were baptized knew very well, and they remember how, you know, how their relatives and of course, you know, their parents were married. I mean, they maybe couldn't remember that, but they knew that their parents were married by a rav with chuppah v'kiddushin. So that if you want to talk about creating chuppah v'kiddushin for someone who knows that chuppah v'kiddushin requires a ritual, a Jewish marriage, then they know that the presence of these apostate Jews who have been baptized and are living as Christians, that's not chuppah v'kiddushin. So again, what the Rashbah is indicating, that you can open yourself to the possibility of someone who may be totally ignorant of Judaism and was brought up without any knowledge of Judaism, and you could then substitute his willingness, his eager intention to be living together with his wife as husband and wife, that could be a substitute for marriage, but that doesn't apply in this case because they know what chuppah of kiddushin is all about. So they're not trying to find any sort of substitute. They are trying to create, again, we're not judging them, this is the situation that they're in, a marriage that's effectuated according to the law of the church. Argument number three, which you'll see on the top of page 125, is that there's a sheet of the Gaonim. The Gaonim, as you know, came before the Rishonim, so really dating back, you know, from the Rivash's perspective, like 6 centuries before the Rivash. They applied the principle of Ein Adam Osa Be'ilas Nus to any situation of a man and a woman, a Jewish man and woman, who are living together and having a sexual relationship. Then we apply the principle that they don't want to be less nus, they want to be less ishus. Now that's a tremendous chumrah. That's a very extreme, strict approach, because the Rambam only applies Ein Adam Osa Bilas Nus to a case of a couple that was married and then they were divorced. And now they're getting together again. And they never had Chuppah V'Kiddushin on the second round. They had Chuppah V'Kiddushin on the first round. So they've already been married. And in such a case, we can assume, and all, you know, let's be naive, but let's assume that they would like to live together in an Isha's relationship. Not so here, says the Rivash, in the case of a marriage relationship where the couple is intended to be married based on the church law. But what do we do with the Gaonim? The Gaonim want to apply Ein Adam Osa Bilasus Nus to any case of a Jewish man and a Jewish woman all living together. And this is our case.
But isn't there a time factor in there? Here is only a 3-month, we're talking about in a case where he leaves after 3 months. So is that considered a one-night stand type of thing? Or are we saying that it's an Isha's product?
Excellent question. But what I want to show you is the Rivash's radical breakthrough. He wants to square with the Gaonim. And this seems like an impossible task. The Gaonim said that there's a flat rule that Ein Adam Osa Bilasa Bilas Nus. That applies not just in the case of a couple that was married and now after divorce they're living together. That applies to any case of a Jewish man and a Jewish woman. Presumably, when they have two alternatives, they would opt for the alternative of living together, Kedas Moshe Yisrael, with Chuppah V'Kiddushin, even though they didn't have a formal Chuppah V'Kiddushin. If the Gaonim are willing to extend Ein Adam Osa Bilas Bilas Nus to say that they want to live together as a halachically acceptable marriage situation, then we're in trouble here with this couple. Here's where the Rivash says no. Even the Gaonim would not apply Bilas Bilas Nus to this case. Ein Adam Osa Bilas Bilas Nus. Why? Because they were living together as a Christian couple based on a Christian marriage that was performed in a church by a priest. They, at this point, are not interested in Chuppah V'Kiddushin. You can talk about a Jewish boy and a Jewish girl who are having this intimacy, and they would be interested in marriage. It would make sense. So you could say their intention is not for Bilas Nus, but as the Gaonim would have it, for Bilas Ishus. But if there already is a definite complexion to the marriage, and it was done for the purpose of creating a Christian ceremony, a Christian marriage, the fact that they're living together subsequent to this ceremony in the church as husband and wife, that's because their kavana was anything but Ishus. They had no intention of Kiddushin. Kiddushin would be something that's completely antithetical to what they were engaged in. And therefore, even the Gaonim would go as far as to say that this is not a case of Kavana L'Shem Ishus. Finally, we get to numbers 4 and 5. Number 4, he says that none as promiscuous as those who attended this church ceremony. You know, he wants to prove, and, you know, beyond the shadow of a doubt, that this is a bilas nus. He says a be'ila that takes place after marriage in a church is certainly a bilas nus. And finally, number 5, and this is something that the poskim really picked up on, they had no intention, this couple, of observing the laws of nida. So you can't turn around and say, well, they didn't want a bilas nus, right? They wanted to avoid a bilas nus. Well, they're violating the laws of nida. They're not going to mikvah. And if that be the case, that violation is that much more severe than the violation of bilas nus. So to say that we could describe this couple as being interested in a bilas ishus because they want to avoid a bilas nus, when a bilas nus is that much more lenient relative to the violation of nida, then for sure, this doesn't come under Ein Adam Osa Bilas Bilas Nus. These are the five arguments of the Rivash, and these arguments are going to have a tremendous impact on Jewish history. Now, I'm at a crossroads here because I'm looking at the clock and I want to see what we can fit in. So I'm going to sort of summarize in a very superficial way something which maybe we'll have time for maybe next week or another time, and that's the tshuva of Rav Henkin. Rav Eliyahu Henkin, all of a shalom, as my father described it, was the final word in Psak in America. Any question that my father asked, my father served as a rav for close to 5 centuries. I'm sorry, for 5 decades, I meant to say. And any question that he had, he turned to Rav Henkin. After Rav Henkin passed on, Rav Moshe became the Meshiv. But most of the Rabbanim was in my father's age bracket were so used to Rav Henkin, they never really succeeded in making the shift. And Rav Henkin wrote a landmark tshuva about civil marriage. Now you and I would say that civil marriage for sure is not marriage l'shem ishus. I mean, the last thing in their mind is chuppah of a kiddushin. In fact, they may be totally ignorant of what chuppah of a kiddushin is all about. And as it turns out, they were married together in a some sort of a ceremony by the justice of the peace or whatever it might be, and they never separated with a get. That's for sure. And now this woman has a child from a second marriage. What is the status of that child? And when you think about the Baal Tshuva movement today, this is a real serious issue in Yichsin. How do we understand the children of these marriages? Do we have to assume that they are mamzerim? So the beginning of the Tshuva, again, I have it here if anybody wants a copy of it. Rav Henkin writes that their intention was not for Chuppah v'Kiddushin. Chuppah v'Kiddushin is a kind of a kinyan. It's a kind of acquisition. And you definitely need kavana for that acquisition. Says Rav Henkin, no. That's not what kavana is all about in marriage. Kavana in marriage is not for the sake of the kinyan ishus, but simply for the sake of living together as husband and wife. They're not having some sort of promiscuous relationship. They are living for the purpose of marriage. And the marital relations that they're having are within the framework of marriage. And in the next generation, beyond Rav Henkin, Rav Moshe Feinstein, which I think I may have given you a copy, if not I have it here, but you'll see it on page 126. Rav Moshe Feinstein came to the conclusion, no, that the kavana that you need to create marriage, create ishus, has to be l'shem ishus. It has to be for the purpose of Jewish marriage. There's no such concept as, well, we want to live together as husband and wife. What kind of husband and wife? Husband and wife where today you're married and tomorrow, you know, you just pack your bags and you move on to the next marriage? That's not ishus. So here, my friends, we have a tremendously fundamental issue where Moshe Feinstein is going to quote the Rivash. We'll see whether his analogy to the Rivash between the Rivash's post-baptism marriage in the church is the same as civil marriage. As opposed to Rav Henkin, who is assuming that we're making a big mistake if we assume that the definition of kavana, of intention, with regard to Jewish marriage, is identical to general kinyanim, where you have to have in mind the Jewish kinyan. And according to Rav Henkin, there's another concept here, and Rav Henkin spends pages upon pages trying to argue this, until finally he wrote one tshuva, then a second tshuva, then he put it all together in a book, and it's all, the point of all of it is to recognize civil marriage, since the couple wants to live together as husband and wife. That is a kavana, that's an intention which is sufficient enough. He calls it a clear statement of intention to live together as husband and wife. That means it's not a bilas nus.
Therefore, you need, according to Rav Henkin, you need a get.
Correct. According to Rav Henkin, any child that is a product of a second marriage, the first marriage was without chuppah of a kiddushin, it was a civil marriage, and she never got a get kedas Moshe v'Yisrael, the child is a mamzer. Do you understand the repercussions of Rav Henkin's position?
According to Rav Moshe, that didn't apply.
So what was Rav Moshe's position? So Rav Moshe says the following. First of all, Rav Moshe makes a point that there's a fundamental difference, admittedly, between the Rivash and our situation of civil marriage. In the case of the Rivash, there was a decision made by this couple to become Christians and live together as a Christian couple, based on a Christian ceremony, a ritual that took place in the church. Not so, says Rav Moshe, in the case of civil marriage. For example, one of the arguments of the Rivash is that look what these people, these baptized Jews, are doing. They are totally in violation of the laws of Nida, which is much more strict and severe a violation than Bilas Nus. So for sure, they couldn't care less about Bilas Nus. That might be true in the case of a baptized couple. But what about the case of a Jewish couple that know nothing? They haven't been brought up. They never heard of a Nida. They don't even know what a Nida is. In such a case, are you going to tell me that they are in violation of the laws of Nida? For example, he writes, this, you'll see this on page 126. Again, it's a summary of a long argument, a long tshuva of Moshe. He says the following. He says that a man would avoid promiscuity if he had no great investment. You know, why not call it a bias ishus rather than a bias nus? However, just because his wife doesn't attend the mikvah, that doesn't mean that he's not trying to avoid a bilas nus. You know, it's true that he violates even a grave isur like nida. But here in this case, he says, the ordinary man doesn't know anything about nida. He just wants to avoid promiscuity. The very fact that he married this woman is because he doesn't want a promiscuous relationship. He wants a marriage relationship. But on the other hand, Rav Moshe says that although you might apply the principle of ein adam osa bilasa bilas nus in this case, he doesn't want a promiscuous relationship, but does he have a positive kavod l'shem ishus? And Rav Moshe assumes, as opposed to Rav Hankin, that you need a positive kavod l'shem ishus, which of course in a civil marriage situation is completely lacking. And Rav Moshe's final conclusion on this issue is that we're not going to apply mamzerus if she doesn't get a valid get and she goes off with another man, but we will require a get whenever possible. So imagine, a Jewish woman was married civilly. According to Rav Moshe Feinstein, she needs a get. Why? Because Rav Moshe is going to assume that this man doesn't want a promiscuous relationship, and according to the Gaonim, we extended the principle of Ein Adam Bilas Osa Bilas Bilas Nus. Rav Moshe was also very keenly aware of Rav Hankin's position on this issue, and therefore Rav Moshe was very hesitant to just simply say, let her get married without a get. And therefore you'll see here at the end of this paragraph that he writes, Rav Moshe does not conclude that we're a get. Okay, this is a double negative. I wouldn't have written exactly this way. Rav Moshe does not conclude that where a get cannot be obtained, then cases of civil marriage should be divorced without a Jewish bill of, without a get. That's not Rav Moshe's position. Rav Moshe will do somersaults to the end, try to get a get, but at the end of the day, Rav Moshe will allow this woman. There's no indication that this couple married civilly are interested in l'shem chup of a kedusha l'shem isu shal Yisrael kedas Moshe Yisrael, and therefore it's not marriage. So the real issue is going to be hein hein edi yichud. But again, that's only because we can assume that this person knows about ishus, is aware of ishus, and wants ishus. A man who wants to avoid a promiscuous relationship of bilas nus, that's a far cry from a bilas ishus.
So b'di'evet, according to Rav Moshe, it seems that b'di'evet, if you don't have the get, the second marriage would be something.
Correct, and we would not apply mamzerus, but here Rav Moshe would investigate every single case. He would try to see what these people, this couple, husband and wife, what are they aware of and what are they not aware of.
In other words, could she marry a Cohen? Second, that would be an interesting question then.
Well, that's a little bit more complicated, but what I wanted to point out to you is Rav Moshe has two tshuvas on this issue. One is civil marriage, the other is reform marriage. In the case of reform marriage, Rav Moshe is much more concerned about the possibility that they do want Jewish marriage. Civil marriage, maybe they don't know anything about Jewish marriage. They simply were brought up totally assimilated. But in the case of reform marriage, and certainly a conservative marriage, that leaves Rav Moshe with more room to suspect, number one, that they do want ishus, and number two, that the eidim themselves might be kosher witnesses, might be kosher eidim. Now, if you have a page that looks like this, on top of it, it doesn't have a number on the bottom, it says Nisuin Ezrachim, and Ein Adam Osa Bilasa Bilas Nus. So what we're going to do now, in the next 15 minutes, is we're going to introduce an issue about the Ethiopian Jews. And this was a major Holmus, and we're going to see soon that the savior was Rav Avadia Yosef in a landmark tshuva. And Rav Avadia Yosef is going to try to analyze the tshuva of the Rivash and see how it might help us in the case of the Ethiopian Jews. So just by introduction, you know, the Ethiopian Jews, the Falashian Jews, wanted to come to Israel. At that time, the Prime Minister was Rabin, and the question was whether or not the State of Israel has some sort of moral, you know, responsibility towards another Jewish community to save them and get them over here. This enormous amount of funds for these, you know, flights and a million and one other things. And here's where Rabin turns to Rav Avadia Yosef. What is the status of Falashian Jews? Now, we have to combine what we call the Sefer with the Reish, meaning what we're going to talk about now in terms of this great controversy over the status of Falashian Jews, together with our first controversy of Rav Henkin with Rav Moshe Feinstein. So in the first paragraph, the question is, can Rav Moshe Feinstein prove his point that in the case of civil marriages, a get is not required? Again, I'm not talking about reform marriages now. Again, l'chatchila, we're going to require a get, but I'm just saying, if there was no possibility of a get, would we allow this woman to get married without a get? And Rav Moshe quotes the tshuva of the Rivash. And the question is, does the tshuva of the Rivash help Rav Moshe? So here, at this point, which is paragraph number one on your page, we have to make a fundamental distinction. The issue of the get itself, whether she requires a get, is an issue of Eishes Ish. Let me explain. If this woman wants to now get married to a Jewish man, Kedas Moshe B'Yisrael, and she never got a get from her civil marriage partner, we're dealing with a Suffolk Eishes Ish. Meaning, if we assume on one side that the Rivash would not apply in the case of civil marriage as opposed to the case of a Christian marriage, and if we go with Rav Henkin's approach, that Bechlal, you don't need Kavana L'Shem Ishus Kedas Moshe B'Yisrael, you just need Kavana to be married. And all of those arguments would lead us to the conclusion that a woman after civil marriage needs a get desperately. Here, we really think that to allow this woman to get married without a get is very, very heavy, so to speak. You know, that's really a suffix of what we call Yeharikal Yavar. You know, the violation of having a relationship with a married woman in Jewish law is tantamount to the three cardinal sins. It's one of the three cardinal sins called Gili Arayos. And there are so many tzadim here to differentiate between civil marriage and the Rivasha scenario, and B, to accept perhaps Rav Henkin's understanding. And again, I don't know what Rav Henkin would say about a Christian marriage, but certainly in the case of a Jewish woman, a Jewish man married civilly, where deep down in their hearts they want anything but a promiscuous relationship, and given Rav Henkin's definition of Ishus, that all you need is Shelo L'Shem Znus, it would be very, very difficult to allow this woman to get married without a get. And Rav Moshe's position is really, really heroic. However, if we're dealing with the status of the children that are born to her second marriage, that's a horse of a different color. Here, there's so much more room for leniency. And the reason for that is because of a halachic principle that goes the following: Safek Mamzer Lekula, that the Torah only prohibits a marriage that's called Yuchsin for a mamzer vadai, someone who's definitely a mamzer, not someone who's a suffolk mamzer. Now again, since there are various arguments here that would lead us to the conclusion that in her civil marriage she was never married Kedas Moshe B'Yisrael, Allah never recognized that marriage, which fundamentally is Rav Moshe Feinstein's position, then certainly we could rely on that with regard to the child of a second marriage, and say it's in the worst case scenario, it's a Suffolk Mamzer. Now again, Suffolk Mamzer is Mutter Min HaTorah, but it's Osir Min HaRabbanan. So we still have an issue of Mamzeris here, but It's a whole different perspective here. Now, if there are tzadim, if there are logical reasons that will tell you that in this case we could be machriya the suffix, and we could say that the child is not a mamzer, when you're dealing with a situation which maximum would only be an isa derabanan of suffix mamzer, because the Torah never prohibited suffix mamzer, there's so much more room to be making. And I emphasize this because all the issues that we're going to address now, whether it be the status of the Falashian Jews, whether it be the status of Karoim, civil, all these issues, we always have to differentiate between the following two issues. Number one, does she need a get? Am I allowed to marry her without a get? And number two, what's the status of the children as far as Yuchsin is concerned? Those are two fundamentally different issues that I cannot overemphasize. That the first issue is an issue on the highest order, the most severe and strict Isur of Eishes Ish. The second issue in the worst case scenario would be only an Isur Derabbanan of Safek Mamzer, because the Torah permitted a Safek Mamzer to marry into Klal Yisrael. Now, with the few minutes that we have remaining, I want to discuss with you the Falashian Jews. There's a tshuva from the Radbaz. The Radbaz, as you know, we mentioned it last time, was in Egypt 5 centuries ago. This is after the Rivash, Rabbi David ibn Zimra in Cairo. And he identified, after doing research, the Falashian Jews as the descendants of Shevet. Everybody knows? Dan. Okay, Dan was one of the Aseres HaShvatim that were lost at the time of Sancheirev, and the Falashian Jews were the descendants of Dan. And the Radbaz comes to that conclusion without any doubt. Again, historians have issues about this, but that was the position of the Radbaz. Based on the Radbaz, Rav Avadia Yosef says that we don't have any suffix that these Jews coming from Ethiopia are Jews. They are absolutely Jewish. And therefore he turned to the prime minister of that time and he said, do everything under your power to get these Jews out of Ethiopia and bring them to Israel. They are absolutely Jewish. And there was a tremendous controversy because at the time Rav Herzog was the Ashkenazic chief rabbi, and together with Rav Eliezer Waldenberg, another great posting amongst the Ashkenazim, the Tzitz Eliezer, who both came to the conclusion based on other investigations that these Jews were not descendants of Shevet Dan, and therefore their status as Jews is questionable. Rav Avadia Yosef took a very strong stand, and he said, heaven forbid for the Rabbanim to influence the government to ignore what is a great mitzvah in saving these Jews. And as a result of Rav Avadia Yosef's tremendous power and his authority and his respect and so forth and so on, the government of Israel went all out in this operation, magic carpet operation to bring the Ethiopians here. But now we have to ask a different question. Baruch Hashem, the Ethiopians are here, Rav Avadia Yosef identifies them as Jews, but they are not religious Jews in the classic sense, at least at this moment, no, at that moment in time, when they got off the plane. They never received Torah Shebaal Peh. The only guidance they had was Torah Shebichsav. Again, they weren't like the Karoim, the Sadducees, the Tzdukim, who ideologically rejected Torah Shebaal Peh. They would have been very happy to adhere to the tradition and transmit the Torah Shebaal Peh, but they didn't have the possibility of doing so. Even their most outstanding scholar amongst them knew nothing about Torah Shebaal Peh. So their observance of the Torah was just what they understood from the Torah Shebichsav. And therefore, if they had no exposure to the Torah, and the way we know it, to the Halakha, then certainly their marriage was not Kedas Moshe v'Yisrael. And here we have a serious problem, because if their marriage was not Kedas Moshe v'Yisrael, would it have been a halakhically recognized marriage? And then right away, what do you think are the buttons that we should push over here? Is anybody following me? In other words, again, we're having two Jews, a man and a woman, that are living together without a halakhically binding chuppah of a kiddushin, but certainly they're living together as husband and wife. They're doing it according to what they think is the Torah, because that's the Torah that they got. What does that remind you of? Rav Henkin and Rav Moshe Feinstein again. Nobody's with me. I hope I didn't lose you. Right, Rav Henkin says that if you have a husband and wife, Jewish people who are living together because they believe that they're husband and wife, then we're going to apply the principle of Ein Adam Osev Milosev Milosnus. Hence, there's a marriage through beer, and there are Eidim all over the place, right, who know about the fact that they're living together as husband and wife. Rav Moshe Feinstein on the other hand will say, well, it's not enough that they don't have a Kavanah L'Shem Znus, and they're living together as husband and wife, they have to have Kavanah L'Shem Ishus. And here's the real issue. Do they have Kavanah L'Shem Ishus? They really want to be married L'Shem Ishus. This is not the case of someone who doesn't know anything about Ishus. These people know that they want to observe the Torah, just they only have that Torah, the Torah Shemitzah. This is certainly not comparable to the case of a Christian couple that got married after baptism. They have no indication of Kedas Moshe Yisrael. But on the other hand, this couple, Ethiopians living as Jews and identifying as Jews, and they are Jewish in terms of their lineage because they come from Shevet Dan, so then even though they don't observe the Torah the way we want it, and they certainly don't have Chuppah of Kedusha the way that Halacha requires it, but nevertheless, what's going to be with that marriage? Is that marriage recognized? And if it is, we're in deep trouble because they never had get. There was never a get. So now the problem is going to be, can we intermarry with Ethiopians? And the reason for that is going to be because since they didn't get a get from the first marriage, then the child from a second marriage is a mamzer if we do recognize the marriage in the first place, because they really wanted to be married the way the halacha and the way the Torah wants them to marry.
That's only a case where somebody is getting divorced and remarried.
Excellent. Okay, you're one step ahead of me. Okay, so now, this issue, which you'll see in paragraph number 3, about whether we can marry off the Ethiopians, are they allowed? This is relevant to the case of the Karoim. Why? Because the Karoim, likewise, are not observing the Torah Shebal Peh, and they're living together as husband and wife. Shall we assume that that's considered Chuppah V'Kiddushin, that's considered Jewish marriage? They certainly don't want to be listeners, they want to live together as a married couple. Well, what are we going to do with the children of the Karoim? Because in a case where there was no get, then we're dealing with Mamzeres, because we recognize that marriage insofar as they were living together as husband and wife. So the Radbaz writes a tshuva, which you'll see in number Dalet, in which he says that as far as Karoim is concerned, their marriage is not marriage. Why? Because the Karoim are not Ksherim Liedus. They are Psuli Edus. They're disqualified for testimony. So it could be that this couple is living together as husband and wife, and therefore we could say that their Bia is a Bias Ishus, but it requires Eden. And therefore the Radbaz came to the conclusion that there's no problem of marrying off your daughter to a child of the Karoim, again assuming that man is now Baal Tshuva, you know, he wants to be observant. And therefore the Radbaz comes to the conclusion that Kat Gedol Shel Karoim, which is amazing that he admits that there was a great group of Karoim, Shechazru L'Dasa Emes. And he says, who is the one who brought these Karoim back to the true fold? It was Rabbeinu Avram HaChassid. We're not sure exactly who Rabbeinu Avram HaChassid is. Some say it's the son of the Rambam. So we're really going back into a time machine. But there was a group of Karoim that decided that they want to accept Yiddishkeit and they want to live as Jews. And the Radbaz says that we can marry them off. And he writes that the Rabbanim in Mitzrayim would marry off their children to these descendants of those Karoim who came back to the fold. Now keep in mind that if the Rabbanim in Mitzrayim are accepting these children as Ksherim, it must be, says the Radbaz, that they don't recognize the first marriage of their parents, the first marriage meaning when they were married as Karoim. Because if you recognize that marriage and there was no subsequent get, then you have a real psul of yuchsin. And how could they marry off their children? Again, no one's at fault here, but it's a psul of amzeris. And the answer must be that the marriage itself is not valid. And why is the marriage not valid? Because there are no Eidim Ksherim. All the Eidim are psulim. So the Tzitz Eliezer turns to Rav Avadya Yosef, I see we have only 2 minutes left, so I'll finish up real quickly. And he asked the following question. You yourself, Rav Avadya Yosef, are trying to justify your psak based on the fact that these Jews really wanted Chuppah v'Kiddushin. And therefore they're not evildoers that want to live in Znus, and we should accept them because their marriage is valid. Well, if you're going to validate their marriage, then it's going to be Chuppah v'Kiddushin, and the Edim are also Edim Ksherim, because say they also want to live a Jewish life. They're not Rishoyim, they're not like the case of the Karoyim, and therefore you really, this is what he calls, and this is paragraph number Hey, if you can underline this, and this we'll pick it up next time, Takanosam Kilkalosam. You've made it better for them, that makes it worse for them. Because by identifying the Ethiopian Jews as certainly being Jewish and descendants of Dan, and recognizing the fact that they want to be religious Jews, you've basically validated their marriage, and certainly they didn't have a kosher again. So that's going to be the paradox which Rav Avadya Yosef has to respond to. Okay, then thank you everyone, and everyone should have a meaningful fair.